This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 301 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max. We're off to on our road to 400, huh?
That's right. Here we go, David. Strap in for the ride.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of news this week. We're talking about tariffs, FAA news, news from Australia. We always seem to have a lot of that. Climate activists in our Your Grounded files, and a couple of other international stories and some feedback, and a couple of the stories have videos of the week, so I think we should get started.
All right, David, let's get started.
Well, the first story tonight is from DroneLife.com. Tariffs with a capital T, how the trade war with China is affecting the drone community. This was posted a little bit late last week, but clearly with a lot of the consumer and prosumer drones coming from China, the current tariff war between the United States and China is affecting the costs of said items.
That's right. Now, tariffs, of course, have been around for a long time. They're nothing new. Obviously, when goods subject to tariff come into the country, customs collects the tariff, and that becomes really a cost of the importer, and those costs are usually passed along to the consumer. Now, the question is, so what about these Chinese drones and replacement parts? Well, we're seeing, according to this article, sellers respond in different ways. Some of them are planning to pass along any tariffs or some portion of it for the applicable items. We've even seen an example of at least one who's just applying a blanket price increase across all the items rather than item by item. And there are some who are just kind of doing nothing right now just to wait and see what happens because the situation is fairly fluid. What's the long-term impact on the price of Chinese manufactured drones or spare parts or all of that? I guess we'll just have to see how this little tariff spat works itself out.
Unfortunately, these kind of price increases don't tend to go back down, you know, they just sort of stay. So unfortunately, it gets added to the cost. And should the tariffs not go into effect, it doesn't. I don't think I expect the prices to go back down, or they might a little bit. But we're just mentioning this as casual because it's going to affect all of us because we know where the majority of the consumer and prosumer drones come from, as well as their parts. But let's move on to This Week in FAA News. This is from InsideManSystems.com. FAA requests for emergency UAS airspace authorizations on the rise. This is actually kind of good news.
Yeah, it is. And apparently the requests for emergency COAs are up significantly from last year. According to this article, in 2018, the FAA issued 708 special government interest, or SGI, airspace authorizations. Through July 2019, this year, more than 600 have already been issued. So that's a big increase.
And it's not because the events are going up. I think it's because there are more people finding ways to integrate the UASs into their high priority or incidents in a positive way. So and the fact that the FAA seems to be able to issue these SGIs substantially faster than they have in the past. You know, I remember us talking, Max, back in the day when it was exciting that they issued an SGI within a couple of days for whatever the event was. And that seemed exciting, but it sounds like they're really getting this down to a science and moving forward.
Yeah, and of course, these are issued to law enforcement, for example, for major events, things like fires and hurricanes. And they're issued by the FAA System Operations Security Directorate. Tal Halley from the directorate says, quote, more first responder groups are taking advantage of UAS in airspace outside their area of responsibility to support emergency activities, which is likely a reflection of the greater use of UAS in emergencies and raised awareness about our group. Now, I hadn't been familiar with the System Operations Security Directorate, but their mission includes things like the protection of the U.S. and its interests from threats and other major incidents involving the airspace, also to take appropriate action to mitigate the impact of threats, incidents, and associated security measures on the safety and efficiency of the national airspace. So interesting organization to learn a little bit about. And I guess you're right, David. It's kind of not surprising that the number of these things is increasing. And like you say, that's a good sign.
So it's now time for me to geek out a little bit, because it's not often we talk anymore about military UASs. But this story is from SouthernMarylandChronicle.com. U.S. and Australia work side by side on Triton UAS development. The Royal Australian Air Force, has been working with the U.S. Navy Triton team on the MQ-4 Triton, which is the Navy version of the RQ-4 Global Hawk. Now, the MQ-4 is different than the Global Hawk because it's part of what they call BAMS, or Broad Area Maritime Surveillance. And actually, the BAMS Triton was the aircraft that was shot down by Iran over the Persian Gulf. Australia is the first purchaser beyond the United States of the BAMS, or the MQ-4 Triton. And the MQ-4 Triton is directly linked to, now, if you know anything about Greek history or Greek mythology, you know that Poseidon's weapon of choice was the trident. And the reason why this is the trident is because it is part of the weapon systems and is supposed to work with the P-8 Poseidon maritime surveillance aircraft. So that's the manned component, and they are supposed to work together. And Australia is one of the nations that has bought the P-8 to replace their P-3s, like the United States Navy. So they are also purchasing the MQ-4 to work with their P-8s. But this is more about what's happening in Patuxent River, Maryland, kind of where you used to hang out, sort of, Max.
Yeah, pretty close, pretty close. Now, I guess I understand that the Royal Australian Air Force has provided 8 individuals to sort of embed in this program, Cooperative Project Personnel, they call it CPP. And those 8 folks are working with the program teams like engineering, research and development, and flight tests. So they're right in there close with their friends in the U.S. Navy working this program.
It's a joint program now, so they'll be taking their knowledge back to Australia to be the teachers for the students who are going to take over the program. So now, remember, the MQ-4 is not a weaponized platform. It's like the Global Hawk. It's a long endurance, high altitude, long endurance, or HAL aircraft capable of flying over 24 hours. In fact, the Global Hawk was one of the first things that was flown from the U.S. West Coast self-sufficiently to Australia before the Australians purchased the Triton. So, and it is a very, it is internally an extremely different aircraft than the Air Force Global Hawk, because, like I said, it's designed for maritime surveillance, which is the Global Hawk is designed for overland surveillance. So, but that takes care of the military me geeking out. We should move on to other stuff, Max, like your grounded files. I found this kind of disheartening and discouraging. We knew it was going to happen eventually, but the use of drones for a negative aspect.
So this is from TechCrunch. Climate activists plan to use drones to shut down Heathrow Airport next month. And the plan by the group called Heathrow Pause is that they say that they're going to fly drones near Heathrow Airport. The reason for this is they're protesting the third runway at Heathrow, something that's been a cause for lots of debate, let's say, around that area. It's a big deal for the people involved in this argument on both sides. But they are taking, they being the activists, Heathrow Pause, are taking an interesting approach in some ways, David. Now, what they say is they're going to use toy drones, they're calling them, inexpensive, commercially available consumer drones. They're going to fly them no higher than 6 feet, according to this article, which I suspect what they really mean is 2 meters, and it got translated to 6 feet by the author of this article. They're going to fly them, they plan to, inside the 5-kilometer no-fly zone around the airport, not within flight paths, and they say they're going to fly them only in the early morning when no flights are scheduled. So you could say, well, then what's the point? The group says the point is that the airport protocol would require them to shut down the airport if there were drones flying anywhere inside that zone, even if they're only 6 feet off the ground.
Which, yes, they're sort of trying to be safety conscious, but this really is a really bad issue, not taking a stance on the runway, extra runway at Heathrow, but this is going to cause disruptions to thousands of people. We remember what it was like when Gatwick went down and Heathrow went down in December of last year, which was 2018. It's kind of discouraging that these people are taking this to this level. And it's also discouraging that the amount of effort that Heathrow is going to have to put in, and law enforcement and the Ministry of Defense, et cetera, which they've already said that they have anti-UAS or C-UAS, counter-UAS systems set up in case of this. However, it is just a discouraging, and it's, I guess, the first of many these kind of protests will have UAVs as part of them.
The website for the group, which is heathrowpause.org, has some interesting things on it. There's a page they have that's titled About the Disruption to Travelers, where they address, or at least try to address, some of the issues that some travelers have raised about the effect of this. The group says, quote, "We are not the ones who will be canceling flights or grounding aircraft. Our action is designed to be completely safe. If any planes are grounded, it will be Heathrow Airport's decision, probably thanks to pressure from their insurers." So there's a lot more there to take a look at. So especially if you're potentially impacted by this action, you might want to take a look at the group's website, and you can learn a little bit more about their position and what they're trying to do and what they're trying not to do. As far as how long this is planned for, apparently it depends on how many volunteer drone pilots they get, because they're fully expecting that they'll be arrested for flying drones in this way. So the way they're looking at it is the more volunteer pilots they have, the longer this could go on. So bear watching. The first day that this is planned for is September 13th. That's coming up in about a week from now.
Well, we've gone from drones for bad to drones for good. This is from Menafin, or MENAFN.com. Swiss startup dreams of powering homes using drones. We've talked about high altitude, long endurance, pseudo satellites using solar power, but this is a new interesting way to power homes via drones, which wasn't something I would ever think of.
There's a Swiss startup company. It's called SkyPole. And they want to use these drones, like you say, to generate electricity utilizing the high altitude winds. They point out that there is a lot of energy across the planet in the high altitude winds. And so if you can tap that energy somehow to generate electricity, you've got a really wonderful, potentially pretty green source of electricity. So what they've developed here is a drone, a VTOL drone. They say it's almost like a box wing drone. It's designed for really high lift and low drag. And this drone is attached via a thin tether to a unit on the ground, like a drum with this tether. And I'm not really sure what the physics is of this, but the force created by this box wing drone flying around at high altitudes in the wind provides the energy to this drum on the ground that's then used to generate electricity. So I'm not sure exactly of the physics of it, though, David.
Well, do you know what a RAT is? A ram air turbine?
Yes.
It's the little propeller you pop out of an aircraft when you run out of electrical power that powers the aircraft. So if you have a bunch of these little turbines attached to the box wing as the... And I'm looking at this sort of more like a kite than it is. So it's sort of with the tether, it's not going to go very far, but it's using a kite to develop the and have some of the propellers provide power for it to stay aloft and the other propellers to provide electricity like a windmill does. And of course, there is a... Because I'm from Philadelphia, there's a key at the bottom of the tether, so which the lightning comes down and you'll have that. So there's my Benjamin Franklin joke for the evening. But it's a very interesting, these high altitude pseudo satellites are very interesting. Everybody's coming out with these long endurance aircraft. So it's very interesting. This is another one where you throw an aircraft up and it stays aloft forever. I'm really not sure where the drone part comes in, unless it automatically figures out which way the winds are blowing at that altitude, or moves up and down to find the proper winds it needs to generate the electricity. So that's where I'm curious where the drone part is. It's not just a fixed aircraft that climbs to altitude and stays there.
Now, they do have a video. We can put that in the show notes. It's a promotional video from a little while ago. And it doesn't go into a lot of detail about how this operates, but it'll give you an idea of kind of what it all looks like. So you can find that in the show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/301.
So our next story is talking about Altitude Angel, and we talked about Altitude Angel 6 episodes ago. This is from commercialdroneprofessional.com. Altitude Angel launches industry-first Just Culture reporting system. I did find this kind of interesting, how important it is for a self-reporting system for UAVs. And we've talked about self-reporting a lot on our other show, Airplane Geeks, and our co-host there, Mr. Trescott, is very much a fan of self-reporting. And the fact that NASA keeps all of the reports separate from the FAA, and they are provided to be, you can be anonymous. It provides a great system set up here in the United States. But here in Australia, they're setting it up for UASs.
That's right. And it will be an anonymous web portal. They say that there's no such system to collect information about incidents, and that this is the first. And of course, the idea is to learn from them and to pass that knowledge along, that experience along to others. If someone has an incident with a drone and it's not reported or collected anywhere at all, then this obviously just a few people learn from the experience, those that were directly involved in it. But if you can collect all of this across the globe, then that offers the opportunity to do some analysis on the type of incidents that are occurring, to share the corrective action and all of that. So this is a great idea. Of course, it depends on a lot of participation. If the participation doesn't come through, if the data in there is really sparse, then it will have much less value than would otherwise be the case.
But yeah, so we want to encourage this and encourage this behavior, because reporting is important, you know, and your mistake, you can help other people learn from not making that mistake. So this is a really good step in the right direction for the industry. And we'll keep following up on this one, because I'm interested to see what the results are with this going forward. Okay, Max, we've been doing this for over 300 episodes in almost 5 years. And this story I saw was sort of like, okay, this is kind of depressing. But this was from retaileconomics.com, indiatimes.com. Drone bubble bursts, wiping out startups and hammering VC firms. We've been talking about consolidation, but this spins it a little differently, that maybe our hobby is becoming a fad after all, but we did notice a downturn last year at the holidays for how many people were buying drones. Maybe this is a overall trend.
The Thiel Group says that venture capitalists have poured, now get this, $2.6 billion into drones. And that's from the beginning of 2012 through June 2019. That's a lot of VC money coming in. We've seen, obviously, a lot of startups also at the same time. Well, what they're suggesting here is that many of the startups have shut down. Some have consolidated. Others have been purchased and absorbed into other, sometimes larger companies. They're suggesting that the initial enthusiasm is perhaps, or was perhaps, a little bit overheated. They give some examples. They talk about Parrot announced in July that it would stop production of most of its drone lines. Airware startup, software startup, raised $118 million from investors and shut down its doors, laid off 140 employees in 2018. GoPro exited the drone business, laid off hundreds. Crunchbase reports that at least 67 drone startups have been sold since their inception. We've mentioned before Precision Hawk. They've acquired 5 startups in 2018. So there are a lot of things going on here, but they kind of make sense to me. I mean, you're going to have industry shakeouts when you have a new technology come in, especially in the VC culture that we're in now, where everybody is so eager to invest a lot of money in the next big thing, sometimes irrationally. But the article gives some examples of, you know, why some of this is happening. They talk about there are huge numbers of self-employed pilots who are out there offering services. That drives down prices. Chinese technology has advanced tremendously, and that has a couple of effects. One is it makes the drones a lot easier to operate, so fewer people are perhaps hiring drone service providers to operate their drones for them because it's easy enough to do it yourself in many cases now. Also, another factor that they mentioned is regulations, right? The regulations have been slow in coming, and that's had an effect as well. So I don't think that this is kind of a big surprise or unexpected. And I think actually we'll see a lot more of this as the industry tries to figure out what its role is and where it's going.
Yeah, I do believe that it was sort of a negative take on consolidation. But I guess if we go back to our normal analogy about desktop computing and, you know, Apple versus Microsoft versus all of the other aspects, and then eventually you got things like AOL. AOL eventually went away. So
replaced by Facebook.
Exactly. You know, I mean, we've seen change in time. However, it hasn't been a bad thing. Things continue to grow. I do think, though, Max, when we talk about the venture capital, et cetera, there were a lot of people, if you're going to bring up Facebook, that were getting into the drone industry that probably didn't belong in the drone industry. Facebook coming up with their own drone so they could propel Facebook to parts of Africa, et cetera, probably wasn't a good idea. Alphabet is probably another one where Google was getting involved, and maybe they should have, and they've taken a step back. So we had a lot of people throwing money at problems that we didn't know what were problems yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that, again, everybody doesn't want to be left out of something that's growing fast, especially with tech. And so the investment strategy for technology has just been, you know, not break all the rules necessarily, but don't follow the rules. Just get the right people and throw a lot of money at it and just develop. And you'll either come out a winner, or if you're not a winner, then maybe the actual winner will buy you out, and that makes you a winner, you know, financially. It's just not always rational and well thought out. And so I think that we're going to see a continued consolidation, a continued reduction in the number of companies involved in the industry. And it could get a little ugly, but it'll shake out and it'll be something I think is a lot more rational.
But doesn't mean we can't have fun for the next 100 episodes.
Fun along the way. Speaking yep. of fun, David, did you find a video of the week?
Well, no. Well, we sort of got a video of the week from our listener feedback from this week. And this was from Christian. And Christian says, filmmaker and drone geek, a few friends and I created a pilot TV episode to showcase how drones can be used to help solve real-world problems. Our heart is to inspire the next generation of builders, DIYers, and creators with something entertaining and educational. Here's a sizzle reel that gives the general idea of what we're after, as well as a full episode. We're welcome to any feedback and support. If you know anyone that can pass along this who might be interested in a project like this, happy flying, Christian. Pretty neat video Christian sent to us. We'll have links to the show notes for the sizzle reel as well as the full episode. They're both on YouTube, and it's worth looking at. And if you can provide any feedback, you could always send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll be happy to forward it over the team. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube and you have an account, you can always provide feedback directly to them.
Very good. Well, we want to thank you for listening to episode 301 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. Also, show notes where you can find those videos at theuavdigest.com/301.
And of course, you can find us on multiple social media platforms like Facebook, which is facebook.com/UAVDigest, on Twitter @UAVDigest.com. And of course, you can join our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we'll send you a hyperlink, and you can join the team, and you can discuss drones the other 6 days of the week that you aren't listening to this show. And of course, if you'd like, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.